He supports President Trump's policy of pressure and engagement.
A new president takes office in South Korea. It's Thursday, May 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook for more of our program. Also ahead, we hear from a member of Congress just back from South Korea and Japan. Moving to a new country can be tough. We found someone who can help. Controversy over the World Economic Forum venue. Weaving computer-printed fabric. It all starts now on VOA Asia. South Korea's new president, Moon Jae-in, on Wednesday says he is prepared to visit North Korea to ease tensions over Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs.
안보 위기도 서둘러 해결하겠습니다. 한반도의 평화를 위해 동분서주하겠습니다. 필요하면 곧바로 워싱턴으로
Mr. Moon, fresh off of a landslide election victory Tuesday, vowed during his inaugural address to resolve the issue of the national security crisis as quickly as possible. He said he would visit Washington, Beijing, Tokyo, and even Pyongyang under the right conditions.
한미동맹은 더욱 강화하겠습니다. 한편으로 사드 문제 해결을 위해 미국 및 중국과 진지하게
Mr. Moon said while he wants to strengthen South Korea's alliance with the United States, he will also seriously negotiate with the U.S. and China over the issue of THAAD, a U.S. anti-missile system now deployed in his country. That deployment has angered China. A visit to the North by a South Korean leader is not unprecedented. It's happened twice before. James Kim is a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, and he explains to VOA's Victor Beatty what the right conditions might be for Mr. Moon to make a third trip.
He has stated in several interviews that he supports President Trump's policy of pressure and engagement. And he has also stated that the conditions under which he is willing to sit down and talk with his North Korean counterpart. And that condition needs to be an agreement on Pyongyang's part to agree to first freeze its current development and stop further testing, then eventually denuclearize. Without Pyongyang agreeing to these terms and these stages of eventual denuclearization, I believe he has stated that the conditions are not right for talks.
Well, James, what is the future of this U.S. anti-missile shield called THAAD that was supposed to be deployed in South Korea?
At the moment, THAAD deployment is here and it is operational. There is an existing agreement called the Status Forces Agreement, which lays out the cost sharing on both the part of the United States and South Korea to foot the bill for the deployment of that capability here. Under the agreement, South Korea is responsible for providing the land and any supporting facilities associated with that deployment. All other bills related to maintenance and operation of that capability is on part of the United States. Without a renegotiation on the existing agreement, the agreement stands as is, which means that both parties are obligated to follow through on the terms of that agreement. Without a renegotiation on a new status of forces agreement, we probably won't see any changes there.
Well, Mr. Moon suggested that there would be serious negotiations on it. Does that mean a renegotiation?
It depends on whether the United States is also willing to negotiate on the terms of that agreement.
Well, James, the THAAD deployment has angered the Chinese. How important will it be for Mr. Moon to reach out to Beijing?
It is vitally important, not only for South Korea, but also for China. Both countries have quite a bit to benefit from the trade relationship that has developed over the past two decades or so. It also depends on the bilateral relationship between the United States and China. If the Sino-U.S. relations is more contentious, Mr. Moon's options will be limited. If it is more friendly yet competitive, much like it was before the fourth nuclear test in North Korea, then he has more leeway there.
James Kim said the South Korean people got what they wanted. Removal of Mr. Moon's predecessor, Park Geun-hye, who was embroiled in a corruption scandal, new elections, and a new leader taking the country in a different direction. He said the key now for Mr. Moon is to work with a divided National Assembly to implement campaign pledges aimed at fighting corruption, creating jobs, and reducing the concentration of economic privilege in the hands of powerful business conglomerates. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. South Korean president promises to heal divisions at home and abroad. Blasphemy conviction for Jakarta governor seen as blow for religious freedom. China says it successfully tests new type of missile. Philippine leader names senator ally new foreign chief. Supreme Court hearing in India to decide validity of Muslim divorce practice. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. As members of the U.S. Congress try to understand current issues, we like to understand their perspectives of the world, as each member has a voice in shaping U.S. policy, including toward Asia. VOA Mandarin reporter Peggy Chung recently spoke with Lois Frankel. The Democrat from Florida sits on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, and she's just returned from a visit to South Korea and Japan. Congresswoman Frankel speaks with us about North Korea, her opposition views of President Donald Trump, and about China.
It was a bipartisan trip sponsored by the Aspen Institute, which is a think tank, and it was really to focus on the dangers of the North Korean, what they're doing right now.
What did you learn? What was the biggest lesson that you learned in this trip?
We listened to military personnel, ambassadors, scholars from China, South Korea, United States, Japan. We met with the Prime Minister of Japan, the Defense Minister in South Korea. And I'll tell you, what I learned was, first of all, reinforce the important relationship between the United States and South Korea and Japan. And it also, I emphasize the fact that a military result is not going to be a good one.
The PACOM commander, Admiral Harry Harris, said that it's the worst situation he's ever seen on the Korean Peninsula. Personally, how do you think that the United States should handle this crisis?
Well, I have to agree with almost everyone who has said that a preemptive military intervention is the worst of the worst options that we would have. We have thousands of our own military personnel in the area, hundreds of thousands of Americans, and millions of South Koreans especially, that would be jeopardized if there was any kind of military action, as would our friends in Japan, and the whole destabilization of that region, which would affect, of course, China and everyone around. So I would say that right now the emphasis must be on pressure by China, especially at the economic end, and that is to enforce the sanctions that are already in place and to consider perhaps even more.
It has been over 100 days since President Trump took office. How do you evaluate his performance and how his policies negatively or positively impact your constituents?
Well, I'm going to try to be diplomatic about this. I would say for sure, at best, it's been a learning experience for this president. Now, I disagree with a lot of his policies. He's tried to repeal our health care plan, which is ensuring millions of Americans, giving them access to health care. He's attempted to take away reproductive access, health care access for women, and he's done that around the world. He's ignoring important environmental laws and the fact that we have climate change going on. He is completely disrespected and disregarded all the intelligence that says Russia has hacked our last election. So could I go on and on? Today, he called for a good old shutdown of the government sometime in September. Well, my suggestion is he shut down the Twitter account and, keep learning.
Lastly, is there any message you would like to send to our audience in China?
I've been to China. It was really one of my best and greatest trips. And you know what? When I tell my colleagues, I say, if you're going to go to any country in the world, go to China. Because you have to understand, when you get off the plane and you see so many people hustling and bustling, you understand the economic power of China. And I hope that together, United States and China can work on issues of mutual concern, such as North Korea. But really, we are the two big economic powers in the world. We have to get along and help each other out.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Perspectives from all sides on VOA Asia. Our thanks to Mandarin reporter Peggy Chong and to House of Representatives member Lois Frankel, a Democrat from Florida. Happening now in Asia, supporters of Jakarta Governor Basuki Jahadarnama gathered around City Hall calling for him to be freed after a court sentenced him to 2 years in prison for blasphemy Wednesday. Critics say the conviction is a step backward for religious freedom in Indonesia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you for tuning in. Some Asians coming to the United States seeking a better life don't exactly find it at first. There's exploitation and trafficking of new arrivals. It's an issue in places like California. VOA Indonesian correspondent Dania Eman is here to tell us about a person in San Francisco who helps immigrants in bad situations.
I found this lady. Her name is Hediana Utarti. She lives in San Francisco, California. She is the community projects coordinator for this organization called the San Francisco Asian Women's Shelter, which focuses on helping the human trafficking victims, especially in the language access.
I would call it a small team of very cool people that really work hard to support our Indonesian diaspora members.
So they started in the 80s. At first, they only have three language access, especially for the crisis lines, because lots of immigrants who work in the United States and they need help and they call, but sometimes they don't speak English very well. That's why they need someone who speaks the same language. Then there's this Asian Women's Shelter. And now they have more than three languages, of course, maybe around 20s or more,
okay,
including Indonesia. You know, they don't get paid well, and then they're not treated well, and then they don't know where to go without any language access.
So these are more people who come here being exploited economically, primarily?
Yes.
Okay, so they get a job and maybe they're not paid, or they're really underpaid, or or bad working conditions.
Yes. Hediana Utarti, she mentioned what they need most.
Safe housing, a place that is safe for them, food for sure, clothing that is appropriate for San Francisco because it's always cold here and windy, and now it's always raining, and then language support for sure, and then legal support. Find an attorney as soon as you can.
She also asked the government to get legal help for them.
The U.S. federal government provides 8 months of benefit for survivors of human trafficking. It includes cash aid, a couple hundred dollars, and then food stamps and Medi-Cal for 8 months. Usually, we are able to access that once they receive a T visa or a U visa. However, in California, California provides another 8 months extra that usually we access before they obtain the T visa. So while waiting for the T visa, we go to the California Department of Human Services and ask for that 8 months California benefit, which is the same thing of cash aid, food stamps, and Medi-Cal. The Medi-Cal comes from California health insurance.
It's mainly focused on women and children, but there are lots of men out there who also needs help.
Dania Eman from our VOA Indonesian service. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim.
You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops.
So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. India has welcomed the International Court of Justice's order to Pakistan to stay the death sentence handed down to an Indian man by a Pakistani military court that found him guilty of spying. India asked the ICJ Monday to declare illegal Pakistan's sentencing of Kulbhushan Jadhav. The latest stories are on VOA Asia and VOA Asia Facebook. We continue now with VOA Asia. Cambodia's rapidly normalizing economy will receive an additional boost as it hosts the regional World Economic Forum for the first time this week, with business leaders looking for opportunities to diversify the country's fledgling industries. American lawyer and chairman of the American Chamber of Commerce in Cambodia, Brett Scaroni, says that Cambodia's economy remained the fastest growing in Southeast Asia, with an annual GDP growth exceeding 7% year on year. Garments, tourism, construction, and agriculture are key planks in the local economy, but he said he would prefer to see the number of industries substantially broadened.
We're very hopeful that we'll be getting more light manufacturing here in the future, because we do need to diversify the economy. Right now, we have a strong agricultural sector, we have a strong garment sector, but we want to graduate that light manufacturing from garments to other things.
Across the capital, buildings are getting new paint, parks are being cleaned up, gardens are being manicured ahead of the arrival of 700 delegates from 40 countries for the May 10th through 12th forum, with its focus on technology, growth, and youth. Scaroni said the WEF, which Cambodia will host on behalf of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, would help improve Cambodia's image and an international reputation that is often maligned by corruption and issues like human rights.
Old views of Cambodia are frequently hard to change, so I think there's still an impression out there of Cambodia as a war-torn country with genocide and Khmer Rouge and landmines and so on. But once people come here, the scales fall from their eyes. They see all the new buildings going up. They see so many developments going on.
The economy has been a strong point for the ruling Cambodia People's Party and Prime Minister Hun Sen, who is facing commune elections next month and a national election in July next year. His heavy-handed autocratic style is often criticized and has characterized the government since three decades of war ended in 1998, when Cambodia was still struggling to shake off its image as a failed state. Since then, Hun Sen has been credited with ensuring national security that has underpinned an unprecedented period of economic growth. Scaroni's sentiments were echoed by David Totten, the Phnom-based director of Emerging Markets Consulting, who says the WEF was a great idea.
Cambodia is a perfect country. That not being perfect is not the same as being bad. In many industries, in many sectors, you will find a vibrant entrepreneurial community who are setting up and running successful businesses and growing them year on year.
Nevertheless, opposition to the Cambodia National Rescue Party and human rights activists are far from convinced that Phnom Penh is an ideal venue to host the WEF. Phil Robertson is Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division and says Cambodia is one of the last places that a major meeting like the WEF should be held. He adds that the human rights situation there is in free fall. Robertson said the WEF should speak out on such issues. Cambodia's demographics are also changing as rapidly as its economy, with post-war baby boomers maturing. WEF organizers noted the median age is 23.8 years, and young people are demanding higher pay and skilled work alongside life's luxuries. In the 2013 election, the youth vote sided with the CNRP, resulting in Hun Sen being returned to office, but with a substantially reduced majority. Developing at this hour in Asia, police in Yangon, Myanmar, broke up a confrontation between dozens of Buddhists and Muslims that left at least one person injured. Buddhist hardliners entered a Muslim neighborhood claiming ethnic Rohingya Muslims were hiding illegally in the area. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, 3D printing with metals is rapidly changing the way parts are being manufactured, since it's now possible to create continuous, complex shapes. Where once parts had to be welded to close the gaps, they can now be made as one solid piece. VOA's George Pudich reports, NASA scientists say they can now print flexible material made of intertwined metal rings.
Garments made of metal that fit a human body haven't been seen since medieval times. A skilled ironsmith making the flexible body armor called chain mail had to join each ring by hand or later by a machine. It was impossible to do it in any other way until now. Using a metal 3D printer, engineers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory created a chain mail with no joints.
If you think in chain mail, right, you have a bunch of rings and they all go together, they're connected, but someone or a machine has to go and either weld or connect those things, right? This comes like this out of the machine. So there's no connection, there's no welding, there is nothing like that. It's all one part. It's one single assembly.
The printed fabric rings are all identical and perfectly intertwined with each other. Having no joints eliminated potential structure failure spots. NASA engineers say manufacturing metal fabric allows them to play with different shapes, which opens possibilities for different applications.
Things like, for instance, protection for astronaut spacesuits, micrometeorite protection of debris, as well as at the use that we had in the first place, which is create surfaces for antennas, so be able to have antennas that could change shapes, right?
Paulette Casillas says future astronauts may be able to print materials aboard their spacecraft and even recycle parts that are no longer needed. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, New York University researchers developed a system combining virtual reality with a pressure sensing mat they say can help people with a condition called vestibular dysfunction. We hear more from Faith Lapidus.
Maneuvering through a virtual reality city can help patients with balance problems in real life. With an Oculus Rift VR headset and a pressure sensing mat, physical therapists at New York University are helping Mary Lynn Musco regain her balance and confidence in walking.
You notice things like, I'm at my desk at work, you know, as people are, and I would stand up and want to go down the hall to get something. Well, I'd stand up and want to make sure I wasn't off balance. Now I just stand up and walk. I don't even think about it.
The mat was invented by Tactonic Technologies, a company NYU professor Ken Perlin co-founded.
It's a flat floor mat that acts like a video camera for pressure. When you stand on it, you can see wiggling of your toes, leaning on your heel, footsteps. A little bit like maybe Harry Potter's Marauder map. You know, someone walks on the floor and you see their footsteps.
Anat Lubetsky, who heads the research project, says the combination of the mat, virtual reality, and head tracking software can help identify the best treatment for balance issues.
What we know about balance today is that there is no one-size-fits-all type of intervention for balance problems, because balance problems could vary quite a bit. There are different underlying reasons that people may fall. The idea, if you identify the underlying cause of the balance problem and you intervene at that level, hopefully you will have better outcomes.
The researchers hope the system, still being tested, will provide a powerful, low-cost diagnostic and treatment option for an all-too-common problem with many causes. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Fortunately, not too much technology needed to listen to our program, VOA Asia, but technology is a great way to get our program. Find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud and download us as a podcast. You can also get us from our website, voanews.com, and also Facebook at VOA Asia. We want to hear from you as well. Write to us on Facebook or at voaasia@voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Jim Harmon, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day.